Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Yeah, me again. Anyway, so I did take notes, just because I wanted I was sort of working on the idea that you could just ask a few questions and kind of isolate somebody's mindset, you know, and then be able to argue specifically to what they have messed up in their understanding, because obviously their point is they disagree and somehow think bestowing the adventure of being alive on Earth is some sort of gift or some sort of nice thing to do to something. And obviously I think it's a cruel and insidiously horrible thing to do, especially to animals, because their life is going to suck. pretty much. Some much worse than others, of course, but some very short lives, you know, very quick to the suck part, and then they just do that over and over and over and over again, which sucks. Interruptions. Anyway, so as I was saying, yeah, it just doesn't work. I'm trying to find, you know, you can say, do you believe in God, and blah, 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 and go through this routine. It doesn't seem to isolate the problem as well as I thought it might. But I'm not giving up on that idea that you could probably ask 10 questions and get to a place where you can understand, you know, where somebody's just being kind of unreasonable. And I would say being religious is being unreasonable. I mean, it's a fairy story. You certainly shouldn't expect me to have any respect for it as a, you know, an idea, you know, a description of reality. It's, you know, so flaky and made out of nothing but human stories. I mean, who trusts human beings to tell the truth, especially 2,000 years ago? Get real. So anyway, it's just all kind of, you know, almost an embarrassing feature of human function that they would, you know, invent such obvious fairy stories and, you know, live by them. Yes, and then outside of that context, it gets a little harder to, you know, make an argument that there's some purpose to existence when, you know, the purpose is clearly just for a molecule to attempt to take over the universe. That's, you know, it's not much of a story, because it has a lot of waste in it in terms of a lot of death and, you know, destruction, let's just say. Even for the non-sentient, it just doesn't look good, okay? You build the car and then crash it into a wall, it doesn't look very intelligent. It just kind of seems like a silly thing to do, is to make something complicated and then smash it and crush it and bash it back into little pieces again. So anyway, so I was thinking more of the first principle kind of idea. You know, Hannibal Lecter. Isolating, you know, what do we do, what's the function, and that seems probably just as good a way of isolating where somebody disagrees anyway. So, as I've sort of described it, I sort of arrived here on Earth, that's what I would kind of just say, and what arrived was a brain, you know, and so, yeah, the brain was created, built, and then it popped out into the world, and I wasn't here yet. Okay, the brain was here. The part that's me really wasn't. And after a couple of years, you know, there was some awakening day for me, personally anyway, where I would say that whatever had happened was forgotten, but I now knew what a road was. I knew what up and down was. I knew a lot of stuff, but I didn't know any technical details. So I could sit up and sit down, and I could run, I could do stuff, but I didn't have any clue to what the hell was going on, except I knew I had a mother and a father and sisters, and so I had some, you know, context, but it was a thin context. And what I didn't have, it seems, is much connection to a past that was really just about the doors opened and you're walking into a bigger place, and the world was there to be collected. And so I've just sort of described there was a day for me where I just kind of stood up in my bed, and I had a window above the bed, and I looked out the window, and I had this I'm here kind of moment. Wet diaper. So after, you know, once your brain gets oriented to the world, you know, and it has to figure out a lot of stuff, has to figure out how to move and how to walk and how to, you know, maybe talk a little and, you know, do a little bit of that kind of stuff. And then it's a new adventure. It's like you metamorphize out of being something, just being oriented to the world, to something that's now going to learn about the world. And so now the experiences are going to really mean something. That's how I would describe it. And so, yes, you're going to collect experiences. So every day you're going to wake up and you're going to interact with the world. And you're basically going to create memories that are synonyms to concepts. So clearly you could just tie them easily to good and bad memories. There's going to be, you're going to be creating, but there's a lot of nuance to it in terms of surprise versus something you knew was going to happen, boring versus exciting, all kinds of categories that your daily adventure is going to be described as. You know, each one of those new little pieces of something you discover, some of those discoveries are going to be profound, like incredibly interesting. The first time I saw, I guess it's a rhinoceros beetle, big beetle, big horny hook thing for tipping each other over, you know, so that's the funny part. It isn't a defense mechanism, it's a sexual dominance mechanism. Anyway, which, you know, a huge amount of the function ends up bleeding into this whole competition and sex thing, but they aren't really what you're, I mean, they're the entire motivation in some respects, but they're really not what your brain's doing. Is it's collecting experiences. It's being motivated by things like that, but it's really acquiring understanding. It's acquiring knowledge of the game and how to play and win kind of thing. So a lot happens in terms of when you're collecting these experiences. If you're a lucky person, you're going to collect a personality that's confident and aggressive. If you're unlucky in your experiences, then yeah, you're going to maybe tend to be more risk averse and all that kind of stuff. So I would definitely say I was in that risk averse category where my initial experiences weren't very lucky. Things I was promised never turned out that, you know, they would say school's going to be fun, and you know, it was like literally going to prison. I hated every second of it. It was absolutely nothing to like about any aspect of it. The bus ride, the whole thing was just horrible, you know, compared to the nice free life I had before I had to go to school. And so this was just another bad experience, another, you know, you're lied to by the authorized, the adults, another pile of crap to be kind of discouraged about, like, how the hell can I interact with these people when they can't even, you know, can't have an honest conversation with your parents. You know, they're just constantly lying to you about what's going to happen. You can figure it out, you know, and they already know, but they're just not going to tell you, you know, that these are the risks and this could happen and that could, you know, they're just not going to bother with any of that. So anyway, so people will acquire a personality, which will be kind of a mood unleveler. And, it biases some people to be more reckless than reasonable, and then it biases some people to be less adventurous than reasonable, you could argue. Creates a lot of unreasonableness rather than, the development of a learning perspective. But that's all what it is. And it's all to, you know, eventually get to some point where the mechanism is understanding is power. knowledge is power. I think every human, to some extent, acquires that knowledge, that it's always better to know what somebody else is thinking or what their, you know, obligations are, and what their, you know, to manipulate things, you need to know how they work. So everybody needs some of that power. And some people have street knowledge, and then some people have the more sophisticated intellectual minutiae kind of knowledge. So even knowledge comes in categories of, you know, too uselessly crude and too complex to be of any value to writing the narrative of how do I play life well. And that's really not the issue, though. So somewhere in this process, you don't find out that the obligation is to play a good game, not just to be happy, not to just win for yourself. You have to have a kind of win-win attitude, that if you're going to win, everybody else should not be losing at any rate. That it should be your ambition to not create losers, not to cause losing, to make your gains, and ideally make your gains and help everybody win, you know, figure out how to grow more food or do something where you win and they win. And that really isn't defined as a ideal. It's not even, you know, it's, the fact that it's not even a subject, you know, at school, you know, being a good human, it should be like, a half semester course. It should be, you know, half credits. It should be some kind of course, a recognition that, that's all this is. It's just a brain, absorbing knowledge, and part of that knowledge is an understanding of the game you're playing, you know, what it's for, you know, what's at stake. And that's where you get into these first principles idea, where you can just define, just some facts about what it is to be alive and human on planet Earth. And, you know, that understanding will have to include where your parts came from, how they evolved over, you know, hundreds of millions of years, and what their function originally was, and what utility you can put them to. So even the sex thing, you can understand it, why we have this drive, why there's a hole and a stick, you know, and there's a, you know, function to it. And you can understand that, it has a natural function, but obviously for the individual, at least I can talk for stickers, you know, people that have a stick, it's a very interesting, you know, thing that you have. And as you're maturating, you know, as a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7, you know, it's part of, you know, your identity. Yet you don't know exactly what its function is, except you like having one. It's hard to say, you know, this is where you get into, well, what's other people's experience? So for me, there really wasn't any, I didn't have any clue that the purpose, okay, was so explicitly connected to girls until I was like 11. So for me, sex was just a sensual experience. It really wasn't related to anything specific that a girl had until about 11. That's when I realized, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be falling in love with. And then it becomes a whole nother part of your identity and your personality is, you know, chasing this idea of, you know, are you going to be an alpha or a beta? And you know, how much damage is that going to do to your psychology, because you're going to end up, you know, humiliated and defeated, and none of that's going to put you in a very good mood. I have to say that, you know, like most other things in my life, it was, being sexual was great, but getting complicated with all of this identity and, you know, being able to find the way that you compete for this prize of having your own hole to fuck, was, you know, really just so destructive and just such a horrible waste of emotion and all that crap. And it just distracts you from doing this game of, oh, I'm supposed to be here collecting information. I'm not supposed to be here just scheming to try to get in the girl's pants, blah, 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 blah. And apparently, you know, as I would argue, it's just such a defect. And if you're going to make either machine, this is not an ideal machine, you know, one that tends to want to collect information and be precise and accurate, and then, you know, this, you know, almost silly pursuit of, you know, some sort of behavioral function that's just a kind of fetish, but it's an obsession, you know, an obsessive fetish. And obviously, you know, if you end up doing these things and you have these experiences, then you're able to draw conclusions, and even that can go well or go badly. So, you know, not being, yeah. So it sort of can drag it out even longer, because if you don't successfully have this experience of romance and successful copulation without the pregnancy part, then yes, you're always just stuck with the desire and no understanding of the surprise, which is, oh, it's not going to satisfy me after all. Yeah, I'll get what I want, and then I'll want something else, you know, and my imagination will start wandering me to other places and other things, because the adventure isn't new enough, and it isn't this, and, you know, and this is all part of the whole midlife crisis that people have. And, you know, it's not like it's a midlife crisis, it's just that it isn't until midlife that it gets so bad, you know, that they really have to start running away. But it's there the whole time, you know, grinding away, eating away at the psychology, you know, that they're stuck in this, you know, life that they, you know, they're not Aquaman or whatever the version of it is. That kind of thing. All right. That's a beginning anyway. And so we'll take a pause and reflect on that. All right. So summing up this part of it anyway, just the basic narrative, right? So you don't choose where you're born. You don't choose your parents. You don't do any of that kind of stuff. You're just a byproduct of a lot of previous circumstances. They take place. You're now a brain, okay? And that's really all you are. The rest of the little pieces are just there to give your brain something to interact with and give it, you know, tools to touch and do stuff. But it's, you know, the story, the real story of you, okay, is the brain. So you're just a brain, and you know, maybe there's some better way to describe it instead of saying things like I and me and that, but I don't see, it seems whatever word you're using, you're still going to be stuck with that. Now, we could call, I could say my brain says, you know, but it just doesn't, you know, me brain says, you know, eh. Sorry, not quite good enough. And it's just easier to say I believe or I something, but it's always my brain, this brain, you know. So I guess I shouldn't say my brain, I should say this brain, you know, but I don't know if all that should matter, as long as everybody understands it's a brain and everything it's doing, it having a personality and it being a person and it doing all that kind of crap, is just what brains do. It's their function. That's what they do. Anyway, so you're a brain. You're produced into an environment. The environment's going to have a lot to do with how you have your conditioned experiences as you collect experiences. And you're going to learn routines and patterns and habits of these other people. Maybe you're going to get indoctrinated into a ritual of going to a mosque or going someplace and doing some blah, 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 you know, voodoo. You know, maybe as an adult, you won't be able to step out of that routine. Maybe they'll, you know, if they keep telling you enough times that, you know, the black cat is, you know, 7 years bad luck or whatever, you know, you're going to fall for that crap because they've beaten it into you and you just can't get past the superstition of it. You know, you're going to get cancer if you don't, you know, pet the tree, you know, or spin around three times and, you know, say hoobly hoobly. You know, if you don't use the magic words, bow to the fable, you know, the totem pole, that you'll be jinxed and, you know, that somehow, you know, and so, yes, I think we know that that's mostly what religion is fear, okay, and beaten into people, essentially, of voodoo, you know, of a jinx spell, you know, somebody's going to put a spell on you. Not much else. You know, so your brain, you're maturating an environment. The environment can say, hey, look, there's a whole world to figure out and, you know, do something in. And, you know, if, you know, parents are just playing the game, you know, they're just doing, you know, let's paint a Rockwell painting. You know, of a sunset and we're holding hands and, you know, some sort of bullshit that they're trying to pretend they're involved in. And, you know, your job is not to be fooled by all this little bullshit and try to figure out how to navigate a life, you know, that where you're going to have these compulsions, you know, these impulses, this harassment of desires, and they're always going to be kind of crass in the sense that they're always sort of based on this idea of competition, you know, being the winner, playing the game and winning, because it's no fun being a loser. And, you know, a lot of that is got all of this sex crap tied to it. So I could just say, I mean, the sex crap, I'd say the shortcut is to figure out it's all a head game. So everything, you know, about your attitude or your happiness is just because your own brain is making you unhappy. You know, you don't have to ever be unhappy in a sense of have to be, in the sense that, you know, you can just play fables to get you out of that. Now, I'm not suggesting people should live fake lives and, you know, be too insulting to the true horror and not be, you know, nauseated by how bad things are. But the fact is, you know, that can drive you crazy. And I'm not, you know, I guess I just, you know, it's a, you know, one of those lines you have to draw about what part of it is, you know, a waste, a preventable waste, and what part of it is, well, how can you uncondition yourself? So that's part of the problem I've run into, is that the conditioning I had at 16, I'm still stuck with. So I still have reactions to circumstances in terms of adrenal glands and the other bullshit going on in my body that make those experiences foreboding. And it's because of the connections, the memory connections. And so even if I don't pull a memory up to my consciousness, my brain still remembers and it still has those connections. So even the part it's not showing me, like if I say a word like horrible, you know, my brain can think of earthquake, bridge falls on people. My brain can think of different horrible things. But there's a whole bunch of stuff it's thinking about subconsciously. That it has associated. And so whenever I define something as horrible or threatening, the system is reacting to a whole bunch of previous learned experiences. It can't just, you know, it gives you one picture and at a time. It doesn't, because that's all you can, you know, your consciousness is moving so slowly. That's all it can interpret. It can only read so fast, and you can only imagine so fast. So there's a, I think it goes deeper than what you could possibly describe to a psychiatrist. You know, he shows you the ink blot, and you'll come up with a couple of words, but those words aren't the only words your brain is reacting to. It's got a whole bunch of other synonyms in there. But anyway, that's a whole other story about, you know, how much of our existence we consciously experience versus how much of the control is subconscious and conditioned. But anyway, the point is that, going all the way back to the sex thing, is to understand it's, you know, all in your head, whether you've had a good life or a bad life. It's all in your head, whether blah, blah, blah. And you can, to some extent, just fake it. And so I would argue that, you know, I would have appreciated if somebody had told me that when I was 10 years old, you know, that it's all in your head. Your reactions are the only thing you control. And your, you know, falling for it, being duped by your impulses, can be a big mistake, and that it's just easier just to fantasize the reality than try to have the reality. So, you know, I think that saves you a lot of trouble, because in most cases, trying to force the reality to be the ideal, trying to grab your piece of the fairy tale of a good life, probably won't work. You know, so it's just a lot easier to just pretend it for that purpose anyway. So anyway, that's how I've dealt with what could be considered, you know, a failed romantic life, is to just pretend it's a failure. I had fun, and it just doesn't matter, you know, that I don't have a trophy wife, and I don't, you know, it didn't all work out wonderfully, because all of that comes with all kinds of baggage and bullshit. So, you know, recognizing that you don't, you know, that it is, you know, it's all just images in your head. Even when a person's really in the room with you, it's just an image in your head. It's just a fact, okay? The person is just an image in your head. And, you know, so it's, you know, if you can practice recognizing that, yeah, well, the fake images I make up, yeah, okay, they're not as detailed, okay, they're not as, you can't touch it, but it's, if you can manufacture that into good enough, you know, it's a lot easier. That's all I'll say. Because it really does, you know, this, I took my notes and I, you know, because you're just doing this narrative that, yes, you're just a brain. The brain collects experiences, which is the same as collecting information, which is the same as collecting understanding, which is the same as modeling the world, so you can participate in it better. And all of that is just ruined, you know, by this stupid impulse to win and, you know, the hungry, horny thing. It, you know, it's just a huge distraction. And, you know, the time wasted. You know, how much, you know, how many, we would have, you know, cured cancer a million years ago if humans weren't so distracted by all of this bullshit. So I guess it's sort of the argument. We're spending so much of our lives scheming to satisfy these stupid little things of winning and whatever, the gratification in some kind of form that makes you feel like you're winning. I don't know. Yeah, it's just so hard to, it's hard to imagine this, the winning of the romantic life, just because in so many cases it's just, you know, addiction and routine and you know, it isn't my definition of successful. Okay, so I would say that, you know, lots of, you know, my parents were married 60 years and, you know, mostly got along. But, yeah, it was just, you know, they just grew into each other's habits. And that's, you know, that's, it just didn't seem like my definition of an ideal romantic life. Anyway. Well, anyway. And, you know, I could say the same thing about every, you know, family thing. It all looks pretty, I mean, it looks like school, looks like prison, frankly, rather than something that's going to liberate you to be all that you can be and all of that kind of crap. It's really just going to ball and chain you into a very routine and humdrummy life. Yeesh. Anyway, but that's, you know, so it's not the subject, but, you know, as soon as you start thinking about the influence of that function, again, the competition thing is related to the sex thing, and it's just this, you know, and it's as dominating as breathing and eating, and then, yeah, sex, you know, it's right there in the way. Stopping the machine, the brain, distracting it into scheming for, you know, this personal victory shit. When what it should be scheming for is solving the puzzles that exist in life. So I could argue that that was to my benefit in the sense that, although highly distracted by the distracted by the sensual pleasure, I was also, you know, intensely curious about how things worked. And, so I did spend a lot of time figuring it out, you know, testing and messing and breaking things to find out how they worked and all of that kind of stuff. So it was always another part, at least it was in the categories, this thing of curiosity. That is another word worth throwing in there as a, what motivates curiosity. It might just be the fact that if you do spend enough time losing your money, you know, at Las Vegas, you might want to start spending some time figuring out what game is better to play or which one has better odds or, you know, so if you have a negative experience in interacting with the world, you might have a greater passion to understand how things work because you're not able to successfully navigate them the way things are. So if your boat keeps crashing, well, then maybe you'll figure out how sails work and how this works and how that. And if your boat isn't crashing, well, then you say, who cares? I don't have a problem. I don't need to know anything more because everything's working just fine. So obviously the person whose life isn't satisfactory in terms of they have you know, too much red ink, and they're probably going to be more motivated to you know, have the tools to change their odds, improve their odds, maybe. So I don't think I ever thought of it in those terms, but you know, I certainly was seeking understanding. Now the trick is that you found out that, you know, a lot of, there's the bullshit of the silly stories, and then there's the bullshit of the over intelligent nuanced, I don't even know, you know, detail minutia kind of bullshit that doesn't serve any purpose either. Knowing too much doesn't help. You know, it's knowing the right amount that you have to find is this right balance between the technical detail and, you know, missing something important because you're not paying, you know, because you've really made it too superficial. There's a difference, say, between, well, I just thought of a 60 Minutes episode, you know, where some guy made a 6-foot-long Noah's Ark out of popsicle sticks or something. and they sort of implied that this boat could have been made when the physical dynamics change entirely when you start making something bigger. Gravity, everything becomes a huge liability. And it won't work. You know, the same thing you can do with popsicle sticks, you can't do with real lumber, you know, that kind of argument. And so that's a thing of to know right now. So some person who doesn't know some of the physics or some of the dynamics could have the impression, okay, that, yeah, if it works when it's a, you know, a 6-inch model, then it should work when it's a 600-foot model. And they'd just be wrong, right? Because they didn't have enough information. So that sort of gets to, you know, how I end up making physics videos, is, you know, because the intellectuals have sort of dropped the ball in terms of they've gotten just as silly as the religious people and take a tiny little bit of information, draw a conclusion, and, you know, then start building a whole story out of these silly nonsense pieces they've created. And none of them have to do with the actual pieces on the chessboard. So they've invented a bunch of some other thing. Okay, wait, what could there be you could put on a chessboard? Now, let's see, a guy on a horse. I don't know. Brain always does something stupid. You know, a guy banging a pig. You know, some other little chess piece, you know, pig banger, and, you know, some other kind of thing, and it has some other wacky capacity to do some other wacky shit, and all of that's just going to ruin your model of reality. So if you got a bunch of made-up, phony, fake pieces on the chessboard, you're not going to play very good chess, and, you know, because reality is going to be saying you can't make that move because there's no piece and it can't land on that square because there's no square. So, you know, fuck you. You lose. You're not going to get it right. And such. So I haven't really gotten to my actual notes. This was just the diagram. But it's almost like through this diagram you can get to the whole point that it's a brain. Okay, it arrives on Earth. It's going to be controlled by a whole bunch of bullshit experiences and environmental influences. It's going to acquire a personality that somebody can pigeonhole and say it's pessimist and optimist and this and that, you know, and I don't know if any of that's very useful, but it's either going to be, okay, ignorant scheming, or it's going to be intelligent and curious, you know, something like that, those kind of categories. And if it's intelligent and curious, that is, it's acquired some knowledge, understands that knowledge is power. And it's not just the power for you personally. It empowers you to understand things on a deeper and deeper level because you understand the advantages and, you know, the limitations and the opportunities that certain knowledge provides that you can build on and all that kind of crap. And ultimately, if you're getting somewhere, being a human being, the idea is to say, well, I want to live this life as productively and as efficiently as possible. And so that gets to the first principle part, where I'd say the first, one of the first principles of existence is the recognition that the only thing that makes this existing, the being a brain, interacting means something is the fact that it does have this qualitative experience, that the life experience has elements of good and bad in it, okay? And the good is mostly just erasing bads, but regardless, it has value. There's a value experience. You experience a value event in having a feeling. And so you're not just thinking, that is, you're not just processing your collective associations, your synonyms, your emotional synonyms, you could argue, with concepts, but you're doing that in the context of the experience having value in the terms of it being good to feel good and bad to feel bad. And that feeling bad and feeling good is elemental. It's not something you can change about a feeling. The feeling either is or is not. It's what it is elementally. You don't make it good or make the feeling bad. It just is, period. And so we're playing for something. That's the currency we're playing for. So all of the sentient organisms on life are creating good and bad feelings. They're burning money and making money. You could argue, in a way, the currency is being created, the positive currency, and then the negative currency destroys the value of the positive currency, however you want to look at it. The bad feelings could be thought of as acid, you know, and the good feelings could be thought of as marble. And are we making more marble than we're making acid? Is the net product of this adventure anywhere close to being profitable? And clearly, I'd say the intelligent conclusion is no, it's, you know, way, 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 way short of being something you press the go button on. Because of the depth of the bad, how much of it can be excreted in even the smallest of individual lives, can be so bad and so horrible, the experience so unpleasant, that you would sentence no one to re-experience it. And there really isn't any golden egg that's worth giving a kid cancer for, so to speak. There's no, you know, there's nothing you're going to do in your life that's going to be worth it. Just a fact. You know, unless your life is involved in preventing kids from having cancer. You know, there's very little hope for you. And even that doesn't fix the problem, because obviously they're going to die of something eventually. And so the process of death is a huge, it's the giant part of the price we pay for our existence. And it's just so ironic that because of the silly people with their silly fables, we can't do anything logical or rational in terms of moderating how corrosive those bad experiences are to the net value of existence. I mean, it's a complete destruction. You know, it makes life horrifically, sadistically evil, even. And here the pro-lifers are the one preventing one of the biggest ways you could take the harm out of life and make life less ugly. So one of the ugliest things is the bad death. And here the religious kooks are the ones promoting the death being as bad as possible, because somehow they think it's God's will that we die badly. Yeah, it's just so stupid. It's just so ridiculous when you think about it. You know, that the pro-lifers are aggressively fighting to make life look stupid to somebody with a brain. So somebody who's a little bit intelligent, they're trying, it's almost like they're trying to make life look like a bad idea for us, for the smart people. You know, they're giving us ammunition and weapons against life, by making a part of life that's the worst part worse than it needs to be. So profoundly stupid. But you have to be profoundly stupid to be promoting a fable anyway, to be pushing a fable on humanity. It's just so, it's so evil. All right, another pause and moving along. All right, back. I was just thinking, okay, I could just do that, okay, and now I've changed the world, right, because somehow that's going to trigger something in somebody that wouldn't have been triggered if I didn't do that, okay, so if they didn't quite see what's that picture of, or something like that, you know, some kind of reaction, even just the blue color, even just the colors, even just the fact that there would have been something else in this video if I didn't do that. And all of that, you know, gets calculated by our brains, and all of it is part of the solution that will be our future. And so every second you spend listening to this video is a second you're not spending doing something else. And that's the interesting part. And that it all becomes part of our understanding and who we become and how we behave. And that's really interesting. And it'd be really interesting if we could just put up stop signs and go signs and, you know, caution signs and just, everybody would be obedient, recognize the sign and say, okay, I get it. Okay, this is a place where you have to be careful. This is a place where you can't bother going at all. And this is a place that's pretty, undamaging, undangerous. It'd be nice if you could just make simple arguments about how to live a life and how to do it to end up with the best result, but it's just pretty much impossible. So this always gets to this bit about, free will part. And, some people have this, or make this argument that without free will, there's no accountability. And you can still figure out that, if you can't add 2 + 2, your calculator sucks. Your brain is a piece of junk because it's, it can't get these little simple things right. You're really broken. That can be stated, okay? It doesn't matter whether it's not your fault. It doesn't matter whether it's your fault or not. The fact is you're dangerous. You do stupid things, and you made it in. If you did, molest, rape, and kill, it's just a fact. You did bad things, and your function is dubious. And there's no reason for us, unless you're curing cancer. Obviously through the history of time, there's all kinds of evidence where, some criminals were just too valuable to punish. You could argue there was lots of Nazis who had valuable scientific knowledge, and even though they were aggressively Nazi, it didn't, we got over it. Heisenberg, for example, found a way to forgive and forget. Because the person had utility, but obviously your standard criminal just isn't going to be able to produce anything of enough value to justify the price been paid and the risk of letting them free. So the fact that there's, that not being the fact that people are assholes, and it's not their fault in the sense that somehow their shitty brain got shitty. Okay, as a matter of fact. I mean, it's just a fact that it's shit. Now, I'd argue that it's shit because of a lot of thought crime, so to speak, where they drew conclusions that were convenient to draw rather than conclusions that were reasonable to draw. And so we're back to the scheming brain. And so they were very self-indulgent. But again, you could blame somebody for being an alcoholic, you can blame people for being addicted to heroin, you could blame them, you could say, well, what was their logic in stepping into that mess and breaking their function? And, the logic isn't going to be about some kind of honorable, decent, great pursuit they were on. they weren't trying to do something good. They were trying to maneuver themselves. Scheme, a way, a shortcut, you could even say. People don't have car accidents on purpose, but, clearly a lot of them are obviously preventable by a little bit of paying attention to what the fuck you're doing. So, I mean, there's a crime there in terms of, again, the function is shit. If you can't take it seriously and play by the rules, there's every reason for society to say, let's not encourage that. So let's discourage not playing by the rules by, whacking a few heads off. Perfectly reasonable, frankly. But this idea, that because it's all determined, and it is, I showed you my shirt, okay, because my brain came up with that as the way to interject something different. Something completely different. but it could have calculated something else if I had some other recent experience. Then I would have used some other trick. I would have, you know, found something useful. You know, made the argument that way. I would have made it a different way if I had a different experience last week. Just a fact. Might not even have occurred to me to do it at all. And so I'm programmed, you're programmed, we're all programmed. And part of the argument is though the whole pursuit of the human race is to acquire more and more and more knowledge. So even though our brains are still scheming, they're still calculating kind of shittily, the idea is that once you get all the right precessor kind of information, once you get your 2 plus 2 and your 3 plus 3 and all those things right, well then you can be a pretty good calculator. And so the whole argument through all these videos is that there are people who don't get it, okay? I mean, they can't get these simple principles that your brain is the product of evolution. It's basically a scheming tool by design, but obviously we can use it much more elegantly than that. It's clearly devised to help you scheme plans to acquire, you know, your breathing air, your water, your food, and your satisfaction of your prime directive, which isn't to literally lay eggs, which is just to fertilize them if you're a male. You know, and that's the game, you know, and so you can be controlled by that little game, or you can understand that, we can use this brain to model the whole game, to understand the maze we're in, and what we're playing for. And the fact is what we're playing for isn't getting to the center of the maze. What we're playing for is that every step and every wall and everything causes an effect, an ouch somewhere. And we're trying to maximize how few ouches we cause, basically. Minimize the bad experiences and, by consequence, maximize the positive ones in a sense. The easiest way to make positives more valuable is to take away the price you're paying for them. Lower the price rather than trying to double the merchandise. It just logically makes sense. It's easier to prevent than it is to compensate for. And I'd say logically it's impossible to compensate for a tiny portion of the price being paid, let alone the entire magnitude of the price being paid for us to do this brain on earth thing. And again, it relates to all the brains, because most all of the brains are sensate brains. By volume, I don't know, you know, yeah, I don't know what level of insect you have to get to something that's, we just don't know, because we don't get to experience life as a bug. But obviously their brains, you know, once they are acquiring the capacity to learn, learning sort of requires you to get a reward and punishment for right answers. And so it sort of requires there to be a mechanism of feeling good and feeling bad, I would argue. So I think feeling is pretty old, but how old, I can't say. But there's nothing in the natural order that prevents, unfortunately, a lot of horror and torment and torture. So I've sort of brought this up before, but you could imagine a bug that metamorphizes from a caterpillar to a butterfly, for example, and all of its parts are going to get moved all over the place. And there's nothing in the rules of nature that say the bug doesn't feel any of that. You know, maybe it does, and it's, you know, very unpleasant, but nature wouldn't care, you know, if it's torturing it, as long as it doesn't get in the way of the process, you know. So, That's the ugly part. It's almost like somebody having their limb cut off and they have that feeling of some kind of bad thing happening to the limb that doesn't exist. It's just one of the examples that, you know, nature isn't very efficient. You know, in terms of having any mechanism to prevent gratuitously bad waste of torment. Just dying, you know. There's no point in feeling horrible while you're doing it, you know, but nature doesn't realize that that's just wasted suffering. So it can't prevent it, but we can. We can recognize that it's waste, and we can do reasonable things to mitigate against that waste. So again, you know, another little right to die message thrown out there. And again, it's these silly optimists with their silly fables that are the big defenders of the worst of the waste. And that's disgusting. They're not respectable. So the fact that religious people are just given way too much latitude and by intellectuals, and they're not insulted nearly harshly enough as the sadistic shit for brains that they are, because they're a huge liability. They're never harmless because their voting bloc is malicious to human comfort. They want you to suffer for Jesus. You know, it's really that bad. But anyway, all right, so summing up. So I really didn't get to my notes at all, and that's probably okay. You know, it gives me something to work on, because I hadn't really worked on. I just had worked on a bunch of synonyms for describing, and everything is, that's all this is, right? Is that everything's just a concept that's a little tiny bit different, a little tiny bit different. You're just trying to find the little bits that are the elemental bits, the stuff that really means something. So I said in one place, let's see, you feel and you think. So just recognizing the two differences between the two experiences we have, or the two things, the two functions our brain is most dominantly producing as consciousness, is feelings and thoughts. And they're sort of blended together in the sense that the brain produces feelings and the brain produces thoughts. Thoughts can provoke feelings and feelings can provoke thoughts. So your mood can put you in the mood to imagine a bunch of negatives because you're feeling synonymous with a negative condition. So you remember other negative conditions and vice versa and all that stuff. They feed into each other a lot. And depending on your personality, you know, what has affected you, you know, then yes, then it can almost be the inverse. You start feeling good and you start questioning, well, what's wrong? Because I'm not supposed to feel good. You know, and you're going to find some way to ruin it. You know, with your recognition that, oh, wait, man, I'm going to die anyway, blah, blah, blah. All the, you know, your brain gurgitates all of those negative thoughts to, you know, ruin the fun. And such. And then, like I said, but different personalities end up going different ways. They double down. So some people, they feel good, and then they feel immune, and then they feel empowered, and then they, you know, it just makes them more likely to do something stupid and reckless and dangerous and dumb. All of that. So, maybe for next time, one of the first principles is that feelings have value. So that's a simple statement. Built in, primal, elemental. So they're built in. You know, there's nothing, you don't have to do something to the feeling. You don't have to interpret it. You experience it. It's overtly, yeah, I'll do that again. And it's, I don't want to do that anymore. You know, it already fits in a category. You don't have to put it in a category. You don't have to understand it. It's already telling you what it is overtly. in terms of its goodness and its badness. It reeks of it. It doesn't require interpretation. So it's primal, it's elemental, it's fundamental. You know, you can't escape the fact that this quality of having a value difference, you know, feeling a nail in your eye is not the same as a cupcake. It's, we can measure the difference between them, and it's easy to see that one is essentially black and one of them is white. The contrast is obvious. It's not something you interpret. It's not something you place on it. It's something it innately has. All right, the essence of, you can't get more essential, you can't get more elemental, you can't get more fundamental. This is the event of good and bad is a feeling. There's nowhere else to go more elemental to find good and bad except a good and bad feeling. It's the core of any idea of value, is the fact that something negative is felt by a brain. So by their very nature, not subject to alternative interpretation. So, I already said that, but that's it. Synthetic and real. So your brain is synthesizing it. I mean, it's making up feeling. It didn't, you know, it's inventing it as a thing to do. So it's mechanically got a bunch of arrangements inside of your brain, little neurons in certain configurations, and that configuration creates a feeling. So it's making it. It's not interpreting it from the reality. It's not trying to imagine, well, in a way it is trying to imagine value. And it's imagining it as a feeling. That's the imagery it's using. That's the image it creates as a sensation. Its sensation doesn't have color, and it doesn't have contrast, and it doesn't have shapes. Instead, it's a feeling. All right. So, synthetic and real. It really happens. It's a real event. Brains make it. It happens. It's really happening to us. And it's the most important thing happening on planet Earth, is brains having feelings. Now, the thinking's really important to us being able to do anything to moderate the feelings. So we need the intelligence to be able to control what is felt. But clearly the feelings are the creation of the essential need for anything else to exist. Nothing else needs to exist if the feelings didn't exist. The feelings create a necessity. They create an urgency. They create a problem to be solved. And that's when our intelligence should kick in and solve the problem, which is make less bad feelings. And the simple truth is, that's what they're doing on Mars. They're not making any bad feelings. And guess what? You don't lose anything. You didn't give up anything. No one's crying over the absent Martians, and nothing will be weeping over the absent humans. And so we should make ourselves absent. All right, with all the other biological shit on the planet. All right, so that's enough of a video. All right, so acceptable. And we'll see if I can build a firmer foundation out of that, and then build something on top of it that's of some value. And something like that, anyway. Whatever. Working on it. So, till the next time, and such, and so forth, and whatnot. That'll do, pig.